Okay, we're going to move on to item six, Anderson's Neck Oyster Company.
I was unable to figure out how to get these words into.
I understand there are a number of people here for this case, Randy. Probably a number of people here for this. Let me, just for the public's benefit, let me say we're going to handle, we're going to take up item six, Anderson's Neck Oyster Company. Then we are going to move to item 10, and then we'll be breaking for lunch. So if your item is later on the agenda, you know, it's probably going to be a couple of hours at least before we get to you. If you want to take a lunch break, then that would be fine. Mr. Owen.
Good morning, Commissioner, members of the Commission. To the one new Commission member still in the room, again, my name is Randy Owen. I have worked here at the Commission forever. Anderson's Neck Oyster Company is requesting authorization to moor two oysterplexes, and I'll tell you what those are in a minute, four upwellers, and to deploy 1,670 floats over their lease in Morris and Propertank Bay and King and Queen in Gloucester counties. The project is protested. Morris and Propertank Bay are embayments of Propertank Creek. This is the dividing line between King and Queen to the north and Gloucester to the south. Creek empties into the York River about 7.5 miles downstream from the town of West Point, and it's directly across the river from York River State Park. Both bays are best described as shallow, muddy basins, averaging depths of 2.5 feet at mean low water. There are portions that do ebb bare seasonally. And there is an unmarked channel along the northern shoreline, and those depths range from as little as 3 feet to depths greater than 15 feet. The area is very remote. It's surrounded by extensive tidal marsh. Gill nets, crab pots, crab pounds are commonly set and fished. Recreational boat traffic is common. Duck hunting is enjoyed seasonally. There is one commercial landing in Propertank Bay here on the King and Queen side. To my understanding, seafood has been landed there for decades. And there's one private pier here in Morris Bay and Cottage. But for the most part, beyond that, these areas are quite remote. I just threw that in to show you that we were out on the boat and we did, you know, look at some of the gill nets that were being set out there. This is the commercial landing in Propertank Bay. It's owned by Mr. Alex Post. You can see one of the watermen's tied up there with their gear up on the dock. This is the private pier owned by Mr. Tim Taylor over on the Gloucester side in Morris Bay. Nice pier. He is one of your protestants. There are extensive private shellfish leases in the York River just outside the two bays. These are the areas of yellow. There is some public ground out there in green. There's a piece of public ground right here between the two bays. The applicant, Mr. Michael Hild with Anderson's Neck, leases just under 200 acres in the two bays combined. You can see it better in this slide. And that lease is connected to a little gut between this little marsh peninsula that separates the two bays. He also leases 76 acres in the York River just outside there. That lease is narrow. It stretches for about 2 miles along the shoreline. During times of windy weather, it's pretty rough in there. He has about 300,000 market oysters on hand now that he has reared in bottom cages on the York River lease. Those bottom cages are authorized by regulation. He has property inshore of his lease. That's his pier. It's a big one, 1,500 plus or minus feet through tidal marsh. The property known as Anderson's Neck Farm is about 285 acres, and it sits on a, and it fronts on about 3/4 of a mile of the York River. And you can see the position of the property relative to the position of Morris and Propertank Bay. And it's about a mile up to the beginnings of his property from Propertank Creek. He was recently certified by the Health Department to land and ship shellfish from this property in October of this year. He has purchased this refrigerated truck that doubles as a walk-in cooler for the farm for cold storage. This is the boat he's currently using to work the bottom cages in the York. He hopes to use it, of course, to work the floats. His plan is to purchase triploid seed from a Virginia hatchery reared from upper York River broodstock oysters at about 1 millimeter in size, which is roughly what you see on the slide. The seed would be placed in one of each six upwellers that are proposed over his lease in Morris Bay. This is the upper limits, that piece of public ground that stretches between the two bays. So four of the six upwellers would be your standard floating upweller, and I've put a photograph of just what one might look like. But two of those six upwellers would be housed in one each oysterplex. Oysterplex is basically a barge with a building on it, walls, windows, doors, a roof, solar panels on the roof to power the upwellers. Work areas inside for the employees to wash, bag, and tag oysters. It's 28 foot long, 20 foot wide, and 15 foot tall, and he'd like two of these.
Are these the actual proposed structures, or are these just
this examples? Is actually his architect's rendering of the building, yes, sir.
Thank you.
So the seed would be purchased. It'd be reared in the upwellers, with two of those upwellers being in housed in one of these each. Once the seed have reached the appropriate size, they'd be moved over to floats in the two bays. These are trademark floats out of Canada. Shown on the left in the feeding position, shown on the right flipped upside down to kill off the fouling organisms. They can be sunk to avoid winter mortality. Each float has six trays. Each tray holds between 1,000 and 1,500 young oysters, which is 9,000 young oysters per float. That's just a photograph of what the cages look like and give you some appreciation for scale. So the seed would be purchased and reared in the upwellers and the oysterplexes here. They'd be moved out to the floats. And at about, and this is up to Mr. Hill, but at around 2 inches in size, they'd be moved out to the bottom cages in the York, grown to market size, brought by boat back to the oysterplexes for washing, bagging, and tagging, landed on the pier and taken to the truck for cold storage and eventual market delivery. About 2 miles from the pier to the oysterplexes by boat. When Mr. Hill first applied to this agency and the other agencies, he asked for 6,900 floats in Morris Bay, shown in red. That's 34% of the footprint of Morris Bay. We immediately heard from watermen, we heard from local property owners, we had concerns internally. In my initial internal discussions here with Dr. Jim Wesson, Jim was concerned that that many floats and that many oysters would literally either not grow or potentially starve to death. And he thought it would be a good idea if we sat down with Dr. Roger Mann at VIMS to discuss what we're going to call the carrying capacity of Morris Bay. In other words, how much food is out there to support that many oysters. And this is an exploded view of that same slide. You see a series of long lines on one side of Morris Bay and a series of long lines on this side, leaving the middle open for navigation. This was the original proposal, 6,900 floats, and according to the manufacturer of the Oyster Grove Company that makes those cages, that would hold 62.1 million young oysters. So Roger, Dr. Mann, did agree to meet with Jim and I. In fact, we had quite a meeting. We had two meetings, one in July, one in August. We asked Mr. Hill to come to the second meeting. In addition to meeting at VIMS with Roger and Lyle and Karen During from the Wetlands Program, we had Captain Jamie Green, First Sergeant Herbert Bell from law enforcement, myself, Chip attended one of the meetings. We had Ben Stagg from our surveying section. We had three representatives from the Health Department with the Bureau of Shellfish Sanitation, one from the Corps of Engineers and one from the Coast Guard. And in the initial meeting, it was the collective consensus of that group that at the original scale, we were going to potentially exclude existing fisheries, the gill netters, the crab potters. We were going to exceed Morris Bay's ability to feed that many oysters, and there was obviously a concern for navigation. So Roger was asked to calculate how much food was in Morris Bay and to make a recommendation on what was the number that he thought Mr. Hill would succeed at. And he did so with some very heady math. I'm certainly happy to say he's here to explain it to you. Roger recommended that Mr. Hill not attempt to culture any more than between 1.5 and 4.75 million adult oysters. You have to back calculate to get the young oysters. It's about 9 million young oysters or 1,000 floats in Morris Bay. That is, Mr. Hill thought about it. He agreed to it. He submitted revised drawings. That is what's before you today. On the right, that's 1,000 floats to scale in Morris Bay. That represents about 5% of the Morris Bay footprint, down from 34%. He asked Roger to additionally calculate the carrying capacity of Parropatank Bay. That was 670 floats. That's about 6% of that basin's footprint. So in essence, the revised proposal before you today from a float perspective leaves 90, plus, you know, plus or minus 95% of these waters open for all available current recreational and commercial uses. The oysterplexes would be, again, sited just upstream of the public ground in Morris Bay, but out of the channel. In keeping with Dr. Mann's further recommendations, you do have intense culture of animals. You can have problems beneath them with all of the material that gets sloughed off the cages, the oysters themselves. So Mr. Hill proposes three alternate locations for the 1,000 floats from a crop rotation approach so you can allow the bottom sediments to recover from that dense culture of animals above it. You would never see any more than 1,000 floats. This is to show you they could be here, here, or here, and as well in Paropa Tank Bay. Even at this reduced scale, the project remains protested by watermen, by local property owners. I can't tell you whether they all are aware of the revised proposal. We tried to make it available to them. Their concern is that the project's too big. It's going to exclude existing commercial recreational uses. Mr. Taylor, who owns the private pier, is concerned about the impacts on his property. I thought this slide would help you. I plotted the four coordinates of the three cage array. Originally the cages would have been down here, and the private pier sits right there. As currently before you, they won't be any closer than about 1,200 feet from the end of Mr. Taylor's pier. As I said, we had the Coast Guard and the Corps of Engineers at these meetings. There were just a ton of emails and telephone conversations between those meetings concerned about navigation. When the project first came in the door, we said, we need soundings, mainland water soundings. He provided them, bracketing the original proposal, which you see, and lo and behold, we missed the deep water. After talking to the watermen and the local property owners, the channels over here where you see the transects in red, to put all doubt to rest, Rob Butler, sitting behind me, got called to the plate. We went out in the BMRC boat, and Rob found and marked the channel. And I want to say right now to Rob, Royce, and Ben, my hat's off to them. They've given me incredible support on this project. So we marked the channel. All of Rob's soundings are right here. You see them streaming down off the shoreline. I plotted the heavy blue line as the center line of the natural channel. You see it hugs the northern portion of Morris Bay. Go further, when we're out there, when we stop and talk to the working waterman, I asked Rob to drop in behind one of the crabbers who was running back up the river, and this is the course he ran. It's in purple. He cut the corners, but that's what watermen do, you know. They straight line. We actually hit bottom following him in a whaler, but nevertheless, I regard that purple line as waters that are used by the recreation commercial boaters. We asked Mr. Hill to hold his floats well south of that line, and he agreed. So with this, the Coast Guard and the Corps have since blessed this from a navigation standpoint. The white markers on the left will be required to bracket the floats, warning that there's danger ahead. They'll be in the southern portion of Morris Bay. The oysterplexes have to be lit by the marine lanterns that you see here. These are all Coast Guard spec, slow white flashing light at night. Relative to the health department, his lease, which ends right here, is just below downstream of the clean line, but that line does move. It moves as much as 50% of the time, according to the health department. It may be in his lease 1 month and not the next. It can move all the way down into the actual York River. So that's why we had the health department and Captain Green at the meetings at VIMS. Mr. Hill has been made well aware that at any point, if that line moves into his lease, is week-to-week, month-to-month, husbandry operations must be carefully coordinated with law enforcement and the health department.
Randy, before you move off that, is the yellow area the lease?
His lease is here. It connects through this gut, and it wraps around the triangle, the rectangle you see there. So we'll follow his lease. It's this piece here.
Okay.
Cuts through all of this. And it actually includes a portion of Guthrie's Creek.
Okay. So everywhere Mr. Hill is proposing to place the cages, he has leased ground under it.
And you'll note from the slide I showed you earlier, at the staff level, there were three locations. He may want more area, but right now we're saying that we think it's safe to keep them in those three areas for now and see how this plays out.
Okay. Thank you.
This is my attempt to summarize the slideshow. There is a proposal, 6,900 floats, two oyster plexes, four upwellers. The agencies you see in yellow, DMRC, VEMS, the Health Department, the Corps, the Coast Guard, we met on two occasions at VEMS with lots of discussions in between to look at this proposal. We focused on three primary areas: the carrying capacity of Morris Bay to feed that many oysters and handle the waste that they generate, public trust, huge, obviously, recreational uses, commercial uses, gill netting, crab potting. I've been told by the watermen on the water that when they're potting heavy, you can step on them, you know, not get your feet wet. So there's a lot of pot to get set in these waters. We looked at navigation, took our own surveyor out, found the channel, marked it, and we're confident that we have this thing out of the navigable waters. So what you have is the agencies collectively recommending no more than a 1,670 floats. You see their positions here, roughly 5% of those basins, leaving 95% of the waters available for all current day uses from a recreational, riparian, and a commercial use. So I'm going to try to get to my summary. It's a lengthy one, I apologize. Although oyster harvests have improved in recent years, Virginia's traditional commercial oyster industry remains far below the production levels experienced decades ago before the oyster diseases MSX and Dermo ravaged our oyster stocks. Staff believes that shellfish aquaculture provides a benefit not only to the industry, commercial markets, and working watermen, but may improve local water quality through the increased filtration capacity in areas where oysters are grown in dense populations associated with aquaculture. And I think I should go on to say that the crop rotation, you know, will suggest that it isn't all clean filtering. There is some issues associated with, you know, depending on the density of animals that you rear and the depths of the water beneath them. Such operations can provide for incidental spawning and larval recruitment to the fishery, dependent on seed selection, whether you go with a diploid oyster or a triploid oyster. The siting of aquaculture operations, however, often presents challenges from a public trust perspective. Such growth in this new oyster aquaculture industry, especially after years of decline in the traditional oyster fishery, will likely result in conflicts with existing user groups. We are sensitive to these concerns, in particular with these oyster plexes and attendant upwellers. The rationale presented by Mr. Hill for these structures is based upon the distance, which is about 0.3 mile, from his York River lease to his adjacent upland property and the prohibitive cost associated with pumping water from the river to the upland, to an upland elevation that's about 10 feet higher than the water levels in New York. We asked him why he couldn't perform the operations that are proposed in the Oysterplex on his high ground. He also added that the upwellers needed to be sited in the deeper, more protected waters of Morris Bay. As revised, the project effectively reduces the operations encroachment over Morris and Propertank Bays to less than 6% in each of the two basins' total surface areas. Accordingly, the majority of the water area would remain open to the existing recreational commercial uses occurring there today. Therefore, after evaluating the merits of this project and after considering all the factors contained in Section 28.2.1205A of the Code, we recommend approval of the project as revised, contingent on an annual royalty of $3,790.42 for the encroachment of the floats and upwallers over 724,485 square feet of state-owned submerged lands, and that's at half a cent a foot on an annual basis. And the oysterplex is over 1,120 square feet at 15 cents a square foot. And this is all based on the additional following special conditions. And these conditions are somewhat patterned after past decisions by the Commission on Large-Scale Aquaculture. The permit and authorization to retain the structure shall be valid for a period of 5 years. After that period, the permittee may request the Commission reevaluate the project and seek authorization to continue the activity for an additional period of time. The public shall not be excluded from any areas not physically occupied by the authorized structures. The permittee shall properly maintain all structures and shall remove them within 5 days upon their fall into a state of disrepair or upon cessation of their use as an aquaculture structure. All structures must be individually tagged per the Corps of Engineers requirement and marked and located in accordance with all applicable U.S. Coast Guard requirements. The applicant will adhere to the storm contingency plan dated received September 20th, 2012. Should unforeseen conflicts arise, the commission may elect to hold an additional public hearing, at which time they may elect to revoke the permit and direct removal of any and all of the authorized floats. All commercial aquaculture activities conducted in association with the structures authorized herein shall be conducted in compliance with all relevant BMRC and Department of Health regulations. The permit shall not be issued until all approvals have been secured from the Health Department. The permittee shall be required to remove or relocate any of the structures which are determined to be in the way of any approved shoreline projects requested by the adjacent upland property owner within their riparian area. Should the commission agree and authorize the project, we note that such approval does not negate the applicant's need to obtain any additional permits or authorizations required by King and Queen and or Gloucester counties. One footnote there, I met with both county administrators in August at their request. There is an email from the County of King and Queen, item 3F, that essentially says they support the project. They're not done working with Mr. Hilton on all the zoning and requirements, but they would ask that you move forward in the absence of their approval. And lastly, in light of difficulties that we have experienced here at the Commission, compelling removal of abandoned aquaculture structures associated with large operations such as this one, we had one in Lower York River. The Commission may want to consider requiring a $25,000 bond or letter of surety to cover removal costs associated with a potential abandonment and or loss of any approved structures. Lastly, we would encourage Anderson's Neck, LLC, to abide with the applicable best management practices and environmental code of practices documents that have been developed for the Virginia shellfish culture industry with funding from the Virginia Coastal Zone Management Program. I'll try to get as fast as I could.
That's good. Thank you. Questions for Randy? Mr. Tankard.
Go ahead. Mine is specifically with regard to the oyster plexus. They're going to be there 365 days of the year. Is that correct?
Yes, and he did ask additionally for permission to push them out in front of his riparian lands. I showed you the slide where he's got about 3/4 of a mile on the York River. So during periods of calm weather, there's proposed to be anchored where you see them in this slide here. I would say for the majority of their time that he put them there because it's deeper. But he did reserve his request to include moving them out into the York River if it would get him closer to his York River lease during periods of calm weather.
So follow-up question, if I could. In these oyster flexes, he's going to do what I see most of these guys doing. They're going to be washing down their rigs, their cages, et cetera. Is that correct?
Well, I thought about that question a lot because one of the protestants' concerns, and there's that's the mouth of Guthrie's Creek.
Right.
And I prepared a slide, if it helps. The downstream most oysterplex will be 570 feet upstream of the mouth of Guthrie's Creek. And there's a certain amount of recreational use, fishing-wise, from the neighbors that live up that creek. And I apologize. Could you restate your question?
My question was, would he be power washing cages, et cetera, here?
Well, I showed you earlier a slide. The idea is to take the float where it's anchored well south of the oysterplex location, flip it upside down, let the sun kill off the fouling organisms, and flip it back down. So the cages in the York River and the floats in the two bays would not be here. They would not be cleaned at the oysterplex. They'd be cleaned, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, where they're supposed to be anchored as arrays. I would assume, and he can speak to it more, that what would be washed at the oysterplexes are the oysters themselves that are harvested from the floats and bottom cages.
And then, sir, my follow-up question, if I could, sir. What kind of tidal flow is here? I mean, with the debris that will eventually come down, whether they power wash or not.
I don't know.
What kind of tide is that subject to?
You know, the creek itself is, Propertant Creek has a big watershed to it. Guthrie's Creek has a pretty large watershed. I will tell you, in this slide, I met with two of the property owners at their request late last week. I was told not to tell you this, but there's apparently a wonderful fishing hole right here. It's ours.
Point to it again.
Well, importantly, and my surveyor is sitting behind me, and not mine, your surveyor, when that creek, the natural channel comes right down through here, and essentially when you come through this public ground, of the duct line that the waterman says you aim for that, that'll keep you in the natural water. This area in here scours 15 to 20 foot deep. There's a hole right here that's supposedly in that approximate number. But I will also tell you, but over in here, where it's 2.5 foot deep, the bottom, there is no bottom. It's just silt. So I can't begin to, without major, you know, analysis and you know, studies of tide flow, I can't tell you what's going on in there. But if it's scouring 15 to 20 foot deep, these things will be sitting about 60 to 70 feet inshore of that area that's scouring to that depth. So I would imagine it's moving through there.
Okay. Mr. Fox?
Randy, I was concerned, and the way I read Dr. Mann's report, these cages of these oysters proposed by the applicant would be eating up all the food that's available, or most of the food that's available in this area of water. Then I was concerned that maybe some other aquaculture operator may want to claim part of that food, but then I look here on your drawing, and the applicant has all the oyster grounds in those areas. So I guess my concern would be moot. Is that correct?
Do I have to answer that?
Let me ask this along the same lines. Dr. Mann's concern about the quantity of oysters over capacity, did that have to do with the original proposal?
Correct. The original proposal, the 6,900 floats, about 62 million oysters versus 9 million oysters at the current proposal. And Jim said it very nicely. The imagine that many floats, the oysters in the middle of that array are probably never going to get any food, because all the oysters that he would be placing on the outside of that original scale would probably eat up all the food before they ever got to the center of the array. And that's all theorized, of course, but he does lease up the entirety of the open water in Morris Bay as the line is currently marked by the health department.
So there's nobody else that could be applying for this food.
Unless you chose to allow an aquaculture operation over someone else's lease.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Randy. But wait a minute. Before you leave,
sure.
There are a number of conditions associated with this permit as recommended by staff. Is the applicant in agreement with all of these?
I cannot answer that. I think he'd like, if you choose to offer this project, he is definitely voiced his concern that it not be dead at 5 years, that he'd like a longer period of time should you agree to approve this project.
Do you know the date of expiration of his leases?
I do. 2021 and 2022 were the two leases. One, the York River lease was 2021. It was leased first. 2022 would be the 10-year proof of use on the Morris and Propertank Bay lease. Okay.
So they're 9 and 10 years out.
Yes.
Or 8 and 9.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We will hear from the applicant at this point. Mr. Hill?
Presentation. He has a presentation with your...
Mr. Hill, while he's bringing that up, let me swear you in. Do you swear the testimony you'll give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God. Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Michael C. Hill. First and foremost, I would like to thank everyone at the Commission for your time and consideration today. I hope if one thing comes across as a result of this presentation is that I'm extremely passionate about oysters and aquaculture and would love to do something here in order to bring the Upper York River back to a fraction of what it once was in terms of being an oyster growing area, and doing it in a slightly different way, though, in terms of using aquaculture rather than dredging, as was the practice of the past, along with tonguing. Okay. So, you know, part of the reason that I'm doing this is not just for the sake of actually selling oysters, but would like to actually restore the Upper York and its once abundant oyster industry using aquaculture. As Randy has gone through already, in order to do so, a protected nursery is necessary in order to be able to grow the baby oyster seed. The York River is very turbid and very rough water. If you're out there in the February or March time frame, many a time you will wish you were not out there. It is 4 or 5, 5.5 foot chop at times, very, very rough seas. Makes it very difficult with oysters that are in off-bottom trays to be able to survive in that type of environment, especially when they're in the early part of the grow-out process. And so we have been growing oysters out in the York River in off-bottom trays and have had experience, unfortunately, with the smaller oysters, a high level of mortality due to the turbulence that's out there and having the cages flipping over in the rough wave action, and hence the reason for actually having the nursery within Morris Bay, where it's more protected from those wind elements than actually able to use an upwaller to grow the smaller seed oysters. We are here to request that the VMRC would approve of a floating nursery in Morris and Prope tank bays, and what I was hoping to do as part of this presentation is to tell a little bit about the history of this area and growing oysters within the bay. At one time, the upper York River did have a thriving oyster industry. It, in fact, was so abundant that it attracted a bunch of Dutch entrepreneurs that came to the land, some of which actually took possession of Anderson's Neck. The Anderson's Neck farm is King Grant land, 1662, which I currently own. The Wrights took possession of that land around the time of the Civil War, moving down from New York along with the Van Names and several other oystermen, captains, and they basically reared oysters not only within Morris and Propetank Bays, but also within the York River, and they were marketed as celebrated York River oysters commonly, and have actually found some of the bag tags that were used at that time in various different sources on the internet, as well as also at the King and Queen History Museum at the Tavern, where we actually found an old Anderson bag tag. So believe it or not, there's quite a bit of history there, and the Wrights did have a shucking operation, similar to the last case that was just heard on an island that has since become submerged on the York River, where oysters were actually landed and shucked on the property that we own on an old island that was submerged within the York River. So I guess the point is there's a lot of history here, and we're simply trying to bring that back, if we could, using a slightly different method. I don't need to tell you, in terms of some of the things that have happened in terms of oysters unfortunately being depleted over time, using both dredging as well as tonguing, and unfortunately a lack of understanding at the time that putting the actual oyster shell once shucked back into beds as being something that was critical in order to allow the species to continue to propagate over time. Unfortunately, there's very little substrate remaining in the York River as a result of that. On the lands that we have within the York River, we can in areas find hard bottom that still exists. In many areas, it's sitting atop 6 to 8 foot of silt in order to find that hard bottom. And part of the reason that we have trouble with the off-bottom cages is that they sink down into that muck unless we're out there literally every week trying to raise them up above the muck so that they don't actually get submerged and the oysters suffocate to death, unfortunately. I was able to locate, a old historical letter and lots of documentation. In fact, just this week, some of the folks that were a part of the old CRAC operation, as owned by the Chesapeake Corporation, have contacted me and supplied me with a stack of original documents about the CRAC operation, as owned by Chesapeake Corporation. That operation was just downstream of Anderson's Neck across the river at Queens Creek. And unfortunately, that farm was set up, at least in part, to defend the name of the Chesapeake Corporation as not being the sole reason that the oyster industry crashed within the York River. It was actually argued successfully in court, as well as by the scientists that experimented with using aquaculture techniques back in the 1930s, that oysters could be reared successfully in the York River if the oysters were kept off bottom and not allowed to suffocate in the sedimentation that had been created within the York. In researching that, we are attempting to basically use those same techniques that were around back in the 1930s, but with the addition of the oyster plexus to actually have a floating nursery within Morris Bay. I found it interesting that the scientists at the time did have a successful farm in Queens Creek where they were raising the oysters in 11,000 off-bottom sills that were aligned in 3 miles of Queens Creek, and we're applying for a fraction of that. But nonetheless, would still be a significant farm by today's standards. Our intent, as Brandy had mentioned previously, is that The need for the nursery is basically to have protected waters, to use both Morris and Propatank Bays as a primary area for rearing the young oysters before they're moved out to the York River. And the York, unfortunately, is much too choppy in order to do that, as we've experienced in the first 2 years of growing oysters, both with Hurricane Irene, Hurricane Sandy, multiple nor'easters that have been a real challenge for us to deal with out in that open water. From an environmental standpoint, I am very much an environmentalist, amateur ornithologist. I went to Cornell, traveled with my father all over the world looking on bird watching trips and the like. It's a passion of mine, a family obsession, I guess you could say. And part of the thing that I love about the oysters is that you can actually make a strong argument for, by placing the oysters within the water, that you see lots of downstream environmental impacts. And you will see as part of our application that we do have conservation groups such as the Nature Conservancy and Conservation International. They're very much in support of what we're trying to do for those very reasons. By placing the oysters in the water, as this group is well aware of, that filters the water and improves the clarity of the water, which then allows sunlight to penetrate the water so that photosynthesis can occur for the subaquatic grasses that are in the seabeds. I would love to see, as a result of our operation, that begin to happen within Morris and Propatank Bays. There's currently no subaquatic vegetation within those bays at this point. I'd love to have that problem, as that being a competing issue that we have there. We don't currently, but we hope, as a result of this, that some of that subaquatic grasses would, in fact, return to those areas. If that were to happen, we could also see that there would be increased food supply for ducks, waterfowl, and the like, as well as habitat for crabs and fish in order to be able to actually live in those areas, as well as for the turtles that eat those subaquatic grasses as well. So there are some environmental impacts that we're hoping to have. As Randy has mentioned, the revised application contains two solar-powered oysterplexes, which are patent-pending. They are a modification of similar types of arrangements, not identical, but somewhat similar, that are seen up in the Pacific Northwest, Alaska, as well as in the Northeast and Massachusetts area. I'm not aware of oysterplexes that have been adapted for the Chesapeake Bay at this point. If they exist, that may very well be the case. I've not yet seen them, though. And we're hoping to do this in a remote location using solar power, not only because of the environmental aspect of it, but also not to have to constantly be running generators and the like from a noise pollution standpoint out on the water. Randy's been through this, so I'm going to skip this to talk about what the oysterplexes and the cages look like. As I mentioned before, our farm is inspired by the Chesapeake Corporation Sea Rack Farm, and there are 11,000 cages, which is more than 6.5x in terms of size compared to what we've requested in our modified application. Morris Bay, I think it also bears mentioning, is more than 4x the size of Queens Creek, where that model farm once existed across the York River. And obviously, with today's nutrient-laden water compared to what it was like 80 years ago, we think that with Dr. Mann's advice and the like, that we should hopefully be more than capable of supplying enough food to not only supply the existing shellfish that may exist in very depleted stocks within the bays, but also the additional oysters that we're putting in the water as a result of the farm. Our request will enable crabbing, gill netting, and recreational users to continue to enjoy the bay. The application has been dramatically reduced, as Randy has mentioned, in excess of 6,000, down to 1,670 cages, inhabit only about 5% of Morris Bay, 6% of Propatank Bay. And we do intend to use crop rotation, as Randy had mentioned, in order to minimize any impact on the floor of the bays. And the mooring locations have been shifted to deep water within Morris Bay to avoid them from grounding out, which is important at low tide, because the silos that contain the seed oysters rest on a micron fabric. And if they were to hit the bottom, that would break those silos apart and release the seed into the water, which we obviously don't want, considering the amount of oysters that we're going to be placing out there, hopefully with your permission. We would like to be able to actually grow a strain of oyster that's specifically tailored to thrive in the Upper York River. We can't currently do that right now because we don't have a nursery. So if we were to have a nursery, we could buy seed directly from the hatcheries and working in conjunction with them to actually have a strain that is designed to live and survive and flourish in the Upper York River. Currently, we're only able to actually buy seed that other aquaculturists will agree to sell to us that are designed for other waters, such as the Rappahannock. Trinity had mentioned, we have invested quite a bit in terms of infrastructure in order to get us to this point. And, you know, we'd love to be able to continue that. We've done some rough calculations that in the 2 years that we've been out there operating, our oysters have filtered over 1 billion gallons of water to date, which we're very proud of and hope that will increase over time, leading to a cleaner and healthier bay for not only us, but the animals that enjoy it. So that, in essence, is the presentation. I'm not going to jump through some of the remaining slides just for the sake of time, but I will answer some of the prior questions that were raised that I would like to address. It is not the intent to have any power washing taking place on the oyster plexes because of the design of the oyster grow cages that can be flipped up and exposed to the sun, that the natural sun onto the cages would clean off any excess fouling that's on them and then drop naturally into the bay and then pushed out. We do not intend to do any type of power washing on them.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Yes, sir. Mr. Tanker.
Again, with regard to the oyster plexus, why don't you just use regular barge as opposed to the closed-in structure and all that?
Yeah, sure. Great question. So two things. One, we need to be able to actually have solar power in such a way that it's held up well above the water so that it doesn't actually become submerged and actually ruin the electrical circuitry of the solar power. So the intent is to have the array well above the water so it's not exposed to the salt and the like in order to cause any faults in it. The second thing is to try and create an environment that is a little bit protected from the elements so that when there's someone out there working the cages, washing the cages, and excuse me, not washing the cages, washing the oysters and placing them in bags, that it's behind a wall, and so that you have some protection from the elements rather than being just entirely exposed out on the water. Because it is fairly remote, and it's still, even though while it is in the bay, it still does get windy and very, very cold in the winter.
Staff is proposing an annual royalty. Are you in agreement with that?
I would say that certainly. I am prepared to pay it if it is deemed necessary by the commission and appropriate. I very much am trying to spend everything that I can on putting more oysters into the water and increasing the operation, creating jobs. So, would prefer that royalty not exist. But if the commission deems it appropriate, I understand and it would be.
Are you aware of all the other conditions?
I am.
Okay. Permit will not be issued until all approvals have been secured from the Department of Health. You're okay with that?
Yeah.
Where are you with that process?
Sure. Well, there's two things I'd like to say in regard to some of the conditions. If I could deal with the lease term first, and then I'll address the health term. The lease term, my request would be that the, if this is in fact approved, that the term of the lease be tied in and lined up with the off-bottom ground lease that we have within Morris Bay, which is a 10-year lease up in 2021. So just given the amount of capital invested in order to build the structures and to acquire the cages, I am concerned about placing them out in the water and then 5 years later, if for whatever reason, God forbid, the lease was not renewed at that point in time, to then be able to continue to function and operate within the bay despite having the off-bottom lease. So would ask the commission to take that into consideration. The other thing that I would speak to regarding the Department of Health is that there is certainly some open questions about what the health department requirements are for the oyster plexes specifically. The only intended actions to take place on those oyster plexes is the same thing that we do in our boat today: harvesting the oysters, washing them, and placing them in bags. There's no processing whatsoever to take place on the oyster plexus. We're not shucking oysters. We're not placing them into jars, canning, any of that. It is only to simply wash the oysters down, work the oyster cages, place them in bags, and put them on the boat to take to market. So with that, our intent has been to use any bathroom facilities and hand washing on shore, on onshore bathrooms that we have on our property at Anderson's Neck, 2 miles upriver, There's some open questions as to what requirements the health department would like us to put in place in terms of bathroom facilities, either on the oysterplexes or adjacent to them on the bay. That has not yet been resolved, but we do have meetings set up within the next week or two in order to be able to try and address that. And I will say that whatever is required by law in order to meet those requirements, we intend to do.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, do you have anyone else to speak in favor?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Are there those who wish to speak in opposition to the application? See a show of hands, three of you. All right, one at a time, if you could come up. And if you could all three stand, I'll swear you all in at once, and then we'll proceed. Do you swear the testimony you will give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Let us have your name.
Good afternoon. Charles Kimmeth, York County, Virginia. I lease 226 acres on Morris Bay in King and Queen County for recreational use. Numerous friends and associates use the area for boating, fishing, hiking, waterfowl hunting. In my opinion, any use of the public water in Morris Bay for a commercial operation of this size would restrict the recreational opportunities for the general public. I think it's already been noted that the only public ramp for the Propatank River is located just below Morris Bay, and it's owned and operated by the Game Commission. The next access points are at the York River State Park in James City County, and then near the town of West Point. There was also a discussion about the tidal flow. I have personally witnessed during the winter, the late fall and winter months, most of Morris Bay is exposed. It's extremely shallow. One other comment I wanted to make. There was also a mention or a slide shown of Mr. Taylor's property. He couldn't be here today. He has to work. It's obviously a Monday. The big question is, how can an operation of such size be placed adjacent to private landowners who have spent their money in good faith for waterfront property? How can it just show up and be approved? That's a question that, if it is approved, that's, I would not understand that. If the permit is approved, could the applicant come back and increase the size of the operation as time goes?
Not without another permit.
Is there an appeal process if the application is approved?
All the decisions of this commission are appealable to the circuit court, almost all of them.
That would be my main concern. As time goes, if the operation were to increase in size, then I think you're right back to the public's use. Not to mention, I don't know all of the watermen that use that area, but I do know it's quite extensive, especially during the spring. There may be someone here that may speak to that, but I've been going up there for quite some time, quite a number of years, and I would say that during the fair weather months, there's a fair amount of heavy recreational use that I've observed. I'm mostly there during the fall and winter, but the tidal swings are fairly extreme, in my opinion. That's all I have.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to come before you and speak on this issue. I appreciate Mr. Hill's presentation.
Let us have your name for the record.
My name is David Stevens, and I own a home on the Propatank River. I've been using the Propatank in Morris Bay for over 50 years, and it is one of the very few pristine bodies of water off the York River. As Mr. Hill said, gets rough out on the York River, but not in this bay. Is a great place where all our kids learn to water ski, and my wife kayaks up there at least once a week. And we very much appreciate that. Many people use that as a recreational area. We currently have duck blinds, as Mr. Kimmett said, that we use. We fear that those opportunities, a lot of them will be lost if this goes forward. I question this 5% footprint that's being talked about. It all depends on what you take as your baseline, but in terms of the usable water in Morris Bay, I think that 5% is greatly underestimated. I think if you take what water is deep enough to use and use that as your metric, the 5% becomes much larger. In terms of, in other words, I think you're impacting a lot more than just 5% of the available water in Morris Bay. I'd like to change hats a little bit now. I am a professional engineer registered in the state of Virginia. I've spent my career working with NASA, the FAA, and the EPA on environmental issues. And our guiding concern always was that we don't sacrifice the benefits to the public for some private entity. We try to make them certainly live in concert. And I'm concerned that there will be an adverse impact, not only in the terms of this footprint that we're talking about, 5%, which I think is much larger than that from a recreational standpoint, but I also think the activity associated with this is going to have an adverse impact on the hunting and the recreation and the thing. And we go there because it is so pristine. There are no houses around the bay. It's just a beautiful spot. There are eagles' nests in there. Duck hunting has been excellent over the years. I can't see this, or I have great concerns that this will, if this is approved, Morris Bay will not be the pristine recreational area that we have all come to love and live with over the years.
Thank you.
Questions?
Comments?
Excuse me.
Thank you.
He'd like me to put my presentation back up.
Travelstead, members of the commission. I'm Ed Ruark. I'm from Deltaville.
Good to see you.
I've been peel-a-potting and crab-potting over. I'm getting to be an old man, so I can't do the 210 you let me. I have to sell before 110. this is right in the middle of where I crab. Let's push. I come right around this shoreline here, come out to here, and come right on up around here. If I think the staff has done a great job in reducing this. What started out wasn't going to work, in my opinion, at all. It took the bay up. From a crab pot point of view, if this is approved, to give us some space like right in here and right up in here, where you could come around here with lines, I'm a little concerned on how specific. Is this going to be to meets and bounds where there's going to be a pole here and a pole here and a pole here, and he stays inside of that all the time, and that's it, and gets out, then that's a violation. I also hunt over there quite a bit. We've got a blind right in this area, here, here, one up here. Is this going to be worked at daybreak in the morning, and we go to a duck hunt, and we're going to have some guy coming over our customers about some shots fell on top of his head? This ground here has been leased by the same group of people now for over 50 years, and we too have some rights. One of the things that was testified to was that this lease just was gotten this year. This is a whole new concept. This is a new guy on the block. This is the Cornell graduate's come down here and is going to change the world. That doesn't happen all the time. There's a lot of watermen. One of the things that Mr. Owen said is that you can walk on crab pots. And that's daggone near the truth. When you get the spring run of peelers, you have to really take your time and keep from cutting somebody's lines off. All this is going to do is jam that up right in there, all around here. There's a lot more people involved than the few crabbers, too. Nobody's mentioned Tanyard Landon, which is upstream. I've seen at times anywhere from 5 to 25 kayakers putting in at Tanyard Landon and coming down and paddling all the creeks and all this. And now they got a monstrosity in the middle of Morris Bay with two outhouses sitting on floating tanks out there with guys working there washing horses. In my opinion, overall, this part, I'm not a very good operator, this part in Morris Bay right here needs to be put out in the York River. If you had to leave something, leave that. You don't need the rest of it in Marshes. It is borderline to the health department cutoff line. And that line varies. I've seen those little yellow signs. I don't know if you all put them up or the health department puts them up. But I've seen them move from this point right here. There's one right there now, I think, to down around this area here. There's also another cut through right here that y'all don't have on you. Now, anyway, I think there's a lot of watermen. You have quite a few list of people that have spoke against this project. In concept, it sounds good, but it's taken away the primary estuary, pristine estuary, for individual use, individual company use, and I don't think that's the thing we need to do with our title wars. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? Seeing none, Mr. Hill, you're allowed 3 minutes to rebut any arguments you heard or offer additional information.
Well, I would just like to add that one of the comments made about the impact being greater than 5%, I would disagree with that statement, considering the fact that the soundings on here, and Randy may have to help me with making them visible, but I can speak from experience and having been out there with the sounding poles myself, and I think these gentlemen can corroborate what I'm about to say, that this area where the, I'm just going to point with my finger if you don't mind, this area here is extremely shallow. So the fact that we're somehow taking away more than 5%, because that's the deep water would somehow imply greater than 5% because it's the usable water is not accurate. I will say that we do intend to be good neighbors and would like respectfully for Mr. Ruart and the like to continue to be able to use the bay as good neighbors, and just as he currently uses the bay for recreational as well as crabbing and others for gill netting, we would like to be a good neighbor and work alongside them and not preclude them from being able to use the bay going forward. It is a very large body of water, and I would say, given the lack of depth of the bay itself, in fact, while we are using floating cages to try and keep them at the surface of the water where the feeding is the best for the oysters and the like, and to prevent them from actually becoming entrapped within the mud, it's no different than me putting out off-bottom cages that I have rights to place out there now. They would virtually be at almost the same exact depth. So I'm only doing something slightly different than what I currently have rights to do now with the off-bottom lease that we have within Morrison Take Bays, but in attempting to do so in such a way that would allow the oysters to be able to thrive and survive and not use power washers and the like, because the cage is able to actually be flipped and natural sunlight bake off the fouling and the predators on the cage, as opposed to using a gas-powered pressure washer.
Any questions?
Yeah,
Ms. Tanker.
One more with regard to this oyster plexus. I mean, could you not have those off the front of your own land? I know that you mentioned the York River is difficult for cages on the bottom, but why not oyster plexus in front of your own property as opposed to someone else's?
Excellent question. And in fact, was part of my original plan. Unfortunately, there's two things. One, you mentioned, which is the choppiness of the water based upon the architects, engineers, as well as the upwellers, manufacturers that make the upwellers, have advised us that those upwellers would be broken to bits if they were placed up rough water within the York River in a very short period of time. So that was the first concern that we had. The second concern is that the oyster grounds that we leased adjacent to Anderson's Neck are tidal flats, mud flats. Very, very shallow at low tide or at 1.5, 2 feet deep. And you need probably 4.5, 5 feet in depth in order to actually successfully operate the upweller or an oyster plex so that it doesn't ground out at low tide and break apart and release all the seed. And hence the reason for trying to place it in a protected bay that also has deep water, but also being out of the way of the boat traffic so that we don't interfere with other uses.
Follow-up question?
Sure.
Say riparian owners, do they know, in fact, that these oyster plexes would be in front of their pieces of property?
You're referring to the location within Morris Bay?
Yes, sir.
That's my understanding, yes. That
okay.
Everyone,
Randy, you want to respond to that?
Yes. The riparian owner inshore the oyster plexes is item 6A. Jonathan Kennedy. I've spoken with the county on the phone, and his letter is in the packet. I placed him in the neutral category.
Anything else? Okay. Matters before the commission.
This is a large operation that's proposed, but I think the impacts have been considered very carefully with staff and with the length of the recommendations and the detail. I think they've given full consideration, having been to the location and considered it to give a rather persuasive recommendation, in my view. And even Mr. Kenny, I was looking at that letter previously, feels that the potential benefits of the oyster culture outweighs the detriment of having those in front of his property. I think that's telling, you know. This is something that we really hope will change water quality and really do hope will succeed. We don't know that's going to happen, but we have sufficient controls, don't we, if this is to fail, if it is to not be used. And We've been over this before with other similar projects that we can pull it back if there is not success or use. And I think I also agree with extending it for the period of the lease as opposed to 5 years because of the financial investment that's being made. So I would move to approve this with the recommendations as submitted, with the one change, and that is that we grant the permit for the remaining period of the leases, the oyster leases that this applicant has. So I'd make that motion.
Is there a second to the motion? Second by Mr. Tankard. Comments on the motion?
Yes.
Mr. Fox.
Are we going to have these areas marked off with meets and bounds? Will they be staked? I'm sensitive to Mr. Rook's concerns about being able to get around here.
Andy?
This will help.
And you do have three areas.
I anticipated that question.
Good.
These are rough drawings. These are drawings submitted to the Coast Guard by Mr. Hild. The coordinates were provided by Robin Royce. He has to contain his operation within the coordinates that are shown here. The Coast Guard has plotted them on these. I asked for a copy of the Coast Guard plot, if you will. And if you look hard, you'll see these gray asterisks.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the coordinates that Mr. Hild has to apply for to receive
permission the Coast Guard to not only mark these aids navigation, but to confine the cages within. So they're there. They're done by. This all started with Mr. Hill asking for copies of our oyster maps that he then gave to his CAD operator. So all the coordinates, quite frankly, originated from the mapping that we have downstairs, and then working with us and the Coast Guard, these, and you saw the markers that will be required by the Coast Guard, but essentially the Coast Guard's own requirements to mark these floats will rein them in, if you will. Those are, you know, they're there. That helps.
Any other discussion?
And what will the rotation period be?
Our intent was to do it once per year.
Okay.
Any further comments?
I'll just make a further comment. It seems to me that aquaculture is very important to the Commonwealth at this time, and we suspect that we have the benefits of cleaner water and so forth, and I think it's been demonstrated in a number of cases. And when I listen to the protestants, I guess I'm aware that anything new like this causes use conflicts that we as a body have to deal with. And considering that, I think the 5% and the small areas that we have here will not be a concern. I mean, it is another use, but it seems to me it's a good use, and I would not be concerned by that. So I would be in favor of the motion.
Thank you. Any final comments? Seeing none, all those.
Yes. And just pointing out, this is with the $25,000 bond that was requested. I believe that's part also of the recommendations from that. I didn't hear discussion from the applicant on the acceptance of that, but I'm assuming he had accepted that as well, the bond requirement.
You want to respond to that, Mr. Hill?
And the lease rate.
Well, the lease rate, yes, but that's definitely part of the motion, is the lease rate.
I would respectfully request that the commission not require a bond. I would suffice to say that we have sufficient financial wherewithal and intentions in order to ensure that, God forbid, something were to happen, that our operation would not be successful, that we would remove any of the infrastructure that's there. We currently have cages that we're working in the York River now and do the same. Our intent is to do the same exact thing with anything that we would do within Morris and Baroba Tank Base, including the oyster plexes. But if the commission so decides that that is a requirement that you would like to impose as a condition to granting the permit, we would comply with it.
Okay, so to be clear, the motion does contain the bond. Is that correct?
That's correct. Or surety. It's a bond or surety. That's correct.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, sir.